Hi, everybody. This is Kelly with the All Things That Go Bump in the Night podcast. I hope you're all staying safe and following all social distancing regulations that are in place in your state. But I think I just want to get started. This is an episode that I'm entirely excited about. It's two topics, actually, in one. And it kind of ties into a big TV show. So without further ado, I guess I'll get started. All right, so I'm just going to get started. The group is not locked, so that's good. So that way when people hop on, I can see everybody. All right. So let's see here. I'm trying to get all situated. There we go. Can you hear me, babe? Okay. So I'm just going to get started. This is an episode that kind of, it's two episodes in one, because I started doing one episode, the Philadelphia Project, and it kind of segues into a second one that's kind of interrelated. And I'm really, really excited about this. Like, you have no idea. So, the Philadelphia Experiment. On October 28th, 1943, sorry, my words are kind of all weird, the way that they printed. And with me having contacts in, it's kind of hard to see. But, anyways, October 28th, 1943, the U.S. government was able to make the USS Eldridge, a cannon-style destroyer escort, become invisible and teleport from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania to Norfolk, Virginia, which was 276.2 miles south. It was believed that by creating this type of technology, the U.S. would be able to take control of the oceans, giving them kind of a leg up in World War II. I'm sorry. It is believed that the idea for the Philadelphia Project came from Albert Einstein's unified field theory, that if you combine multiple interrelated natures of forces, such as gravity and electromagnetism, you could combine the fields into one single field. Einstein and other unspecified, I use quotation marks, I'm recording for the podcast as well, and other unspecified researchers believed that some version of the field could be enabled using large generators activated in a certain sequence to bend the light around an object via light refraction, rendering the object not only invisible to the naked eye, but also unable to be detected on sonar devices such as submarines, which was huge during World War II. It is reported that this was not the first time that this project was started or was tried, but that it was tried before in late July of that same year. But that time the ship didn't actually teleport, it just disappeared for a few seconds. When the ship reappeared, the sailors complained about severe nausea, but were reportedly unscathed. Witness Carlos M. Allende reported to seeing an eerie green-blue light surrounding the hull of the ship as the generators were starting, before disappearing completely on the October incident. The ship was then seen at the Norfolk shipyard in Virginia, before disappearing again and reappearing back in Philadelphia. Hi, Anon. Most of Carlos's accounts about what happened during the Philadelphia experiment came from letters that he wrote to the famed ufologist Morris K. Jessup. Carlos had been in hiding most of his life out of fear for that the military might do something to him for being a whistleblower. The only reason why he wrote Jessup was because he believed that the Philadelphia experiment would provide insight into extraterrestrials. In fact, one of his claims was that the U.S. government actually got their advice from aliens and that the U.S. government was in a good relationship with. According to his letters, Allende claimed that upon the reappearance of the ship in Philadelphia, its sailors were affected in horrifying ways. Some men went insane. Some developed mysterious illnesses, which honestly, with those types of generators going, that could have easily been radiation sickness. But some men were also completely fused to the bulkheads of the ship. And even some men were found completely inside out. He claimed that all of the sailors that survived this experiment were put under hypnosis and brainwashed to completely forget about what happened. How Carlos supposedly wasn't brainwashed, though, is a complete mystery, at least to me. I couldn't find any information on why he was able to remember all of this, but all of the sailors were not. Let's see here. Carlos did show up at the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization in Tucson, Arizona in 1969, claiming that the entire story was just a hoax, though he did end up recanting that confession later. The letters that Carlos wrote to Jessup were mailed from all over the world, but the return addresses all were from an address in New Kensington, Pennsylvania. Those letters also spoke about the unified field theory. In the 1950s, the unified field theory, which still has never been proven to this day, attempted to merge Einstein's general theory of relativity with electromagnetism. In fact, Allende claimed to have been taught by Einstein himself and could prove that the unified field theory based on events could prove the unified field theory based on events that he witnessed on the October 28th, 1943 incident. In July of 1979, researcher Robert Gowerman went to New Kensington, which actually happened to be his own hometown, to investigate Carlos. What he found, though, was that Carlos Allende was actually born Carl Allen, and all of the claims that were made that he made were all completely unfounded. While Carl was indeed a very intelligent man, his own brother stated that Carl never really worked hard a day in his life except for his quote-unquote leg pulling. They also informed him that Carl was known to be suffering from mental health problems. Authors Charles Berlitz and Bill Moore published the book The Philadelphia Experiment, Project Invisibility, on March 1st, 1995, claiming that Carl's story was completely true. They even included transcripts from an interview with a scientist who was supposedly a part of the project. The problem with this, though, is that they plagiarized parts of their book from the book Thin Air that was published the year earlier. Personnel at the 4th Navy District have suggested that the alleged event was a misunderstanding of routine research during World War II at the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard. An earlier theory was that the foundation for the apocryphal stories arose from degaussing experiments, which have the effect of making a ship undetectable or invisible to magnetic mines. Another theory possible is that of levitation, teleportation, and effects on the human crew might have been attributed to experiments with the generating plant of the destroyer USS Timmerman, whereby a high-frequency generator produced corona discharges, although none of the crew reported suffering effects from the experiment. The USS Eldridge was not commissioned until August 27, 1943, and it remained in port in New York City until December of 1943. The October experiment allegedly took place while the ship was in its first shakedown cruise in the Bahamas. Although proponents of the story claim that the ship's logs might have been falsified or else still be classified, the Office of Naval Research stated in September 1996 that the ONR has never conducted investigations on radar visibility either in 1943 or at any other time, pointing out that the ONR was not established until 1946. It denounces the accounts of the Philadelphia experiment as complete science fiction. A reunion of Navy veterans who had served aboard the USS Eldridge told a Philadelphia newspaper in April 1999 that the ship had never made port in Philadelphia. Further evidence discounted the Philadelphia experiment timeline comes from the U.S. Eldridge's complete World War II action report, including the remarks section of the 1943 deck log available on microfilm. Well, that's interesting. Some of my notes kind of did not print. So, one second while I check that paragraph. Documents, there we go. Sorry, it's print, it's saved onto my computer. I just gotta go to my documents and find it real quick. There we go. Okay. So researcher Jacques Vallée describes a procedure on the U.S. on board the USS Engstrom, which was docked alongside the Eldridge in 1943. The operation involved the generation of a powerful electromagnetic field on board the ship in order to deperm or degauss it, with the goal of rendering the ship undetectable or invisible to magnetically fused undersea mines and torpedoes. This system was invented by a Canadian, Charles F. Goodeve, when he held the rank of commander in the Royal Canadian Naval Volunteer Reserve, and the Royal Navy and other navies used it widely during World War II. British ships of the era also included such degaussing systems built into the upper decks. Degaussing is still used today, however, it has no effect on visible light or radar. Vallée speculates that accounts of the USS Engstrom's degaussing might have been garbled or confabulated in subsequent retellings, and that these accounts may have influenced the story of the Philadelphia experiment. Vallée cites a veteran who worked on board the USS Engstrom and who suggests it might have traveled from Virginia to Norfolk and back in a single day at a time when merchant ships could not, by using the Chesapeake and Delaware Canal and Chesapeake Bay, which was at the time open to only naval vessels. Use of that canal was kept quiet. German submarines had ravaged shipping along the East Coast during Operation Drumbeat, and thus military ships unable to protect themselves were secretly moved via canals to avoid the threat. The same veteran claims to be the man that Allende witnessed disappearing at a bar. He said that there were two men that had disappeared completely from a bar in Virginia and had completely shocked the waitress. He claims that when a fight broke out, friendly barmaids whisked him out of the bar before the police arrived because he was underage for drinking. They then covered for him by claiming that he had disappeared. All right. Hi, Adrian. Hi, Rose. All right, I gotta plug my laptop in. It's dying. Sorry, guys. There we go. Maybe? There we go. Okay. So, some people do believe that the Philadelphia experiment was actually just the start of another project known as the Montauk Project. Preston Nichols, who holds degrees in parapsychology, psychology, and electrical engineering, claims to have been able to recover repressed memories of his own involvement in the project and repeated abductions to continue said involvement. Rumors that the U.S. government had been conducting experiments in psychological warfare in Montauk at either Camp Hero or the Montauk Air Force Station began to bubble up in the mid-1980s. Preston B. Nichols legitimized the theory when he detailed the supposed events in a series of books. Excuse me, sorry. In the Montauk Project, Experiments in Time, which was published in 1982, Nichols recovered repressed memories about his stint as a subject in a mysterious experiment. Soon, others involved with the Montauk Project came forward to corroborate some of Nichols' seemingly outlandish claims. As these and other subjects recovered more of their memories, they gave numerous interviews about their involvement in experiments involving space, time, and other dimensions. Depending on the interview and when it was documented, the scope of what happened in Montauk is expansive enough to include many other conspiracies. As of now, the going narrative leading up to the 1983 incident begins during World War II with the Philadelphia Project. After seeing the Philadelphia experiment in 1988, oh, and it didn't save that either. Can't believe this. There it is. 57-year-old Al Balik couldn't shake the eerie feeling that he had seen it somewhere before. Lost my spot in my notes. There we go. Undergoing various forms of New Age therapies, Bielik was able to uncover repressed memories of having worked on the Montauk Project in the 1970s and 1980s. He also ascertained that his memories had been locked away to keep the experiment a secret. As his memories came flooding back, he learned that his name wasn't Al Bielik after all. He was born Edward Cameron. He'd also worked on the Philadelphia Project with his brother Duncan Cameron when both men were in their mid-20s. A few years later, Al Bielik presented the story at a mutual UFO network conference. The Philadelphia experiment was real, he said, and he was the proof, having lived out the World War II section of the movie. Bielik claimed that sometime in the 1940s, Nikola Tesla figured out how to make the USS Eldridge invisible, and in the process opened up a time wormhole into the future that sucked in the ship. The Cameron brothers were on board, jumping off the vessel and landing at Montauk's Camp Hero on August 12, 1983. The military promptly sent them back through the wormhole with a mission: destroy the equipment on the Eldridge. According to Bielik, the brothers completed their mission, though that didn't stop the government from doing more experiments on building portals into the future. During a 1992 speech for the Mutual UFO Network, Bielik described in vague terms what he'd been, how he'd been de-aged, had his memory wiped, and had been forced to live out the rest of his life as Al Bielik. He explained how in the early 1960s, he, as Edward, had convinced his father to have another child so they could port Duncan's consciousness from 1983 into the sibling born in 1963. Bielik referred to this version of Duncan as a walk-in soul. He also suggested that a 1983 accident, as detailed as he gets, caused him to begin aging rapidly. Bielik's stories circulated and gained the attention of Preston Nichols, who would befriend Bielik and tell the Cameron brothers and his own story. In the Montauk Project, Experiments in Time, Nichols wrote of his time working at Camp Hero on the secret experiments, specifically during the 1970s. He claimed he worked with Bielik on something called the Montauk Chair, a piece of furniture that used electromagnetics to apply psychic powers. Duncan Cameron, the walk-in soul child version born in 1963, was found to have psychic powers and became the focus of many of the Montauk Chair experiments. Apparently, Duncan could manifest objects just by thinking about them while in the Montauk Chair. One of the experiments Nichols describes sounds a lot to be like an experiment performed in a TV show, which I will get into. The first experiment was called the Seeing Eye. With a lock of a person's hair or other appropriate object in his hand, Duncan could concentrate on the person and be able to see as if he was seeing through their eyes, hearing through their ears and feeling through their body. He could actually see through other people anywhere on the planet. Nichols continued to experiment with Duncan, who was such a powerful psychic that no one suspected that he was a man from the distant past inserted into a new body. He tried to harness his adept subject's powers in the Montauk chair to conduct mind control experiments using secret radio waves at Camp Hero. Radio dishes, sorry. This is where the other children come in. And then, of course, my notes did not print there either. In his book, Nichols writes of other boys being brought in and experimented on. Some were sent through a portal into the unknown of space-time. In Nichols' book, these abductees were known as the Montauk Boys. And since Nichols and Baylock started speaking about their regained memories, other Long Island men have rediscovered that they were frequently abducted from their homes by Camp Hero scientists who wanted to break them psychologically so that they could implant subconscious commands. After several years of experimenting with Duncan and the Montauk chair, Nichols claims that he could reliably travel to other times and places, even to Mars. Eventually, they were able to program Duncan with some basic commands so that the poor kid didn't need to be confined to the chair all the time. At one point, however, Nichols' superiors told him to turn on the Montauk chair and leave it running through August 12, 1983. As the story goes, by having another time travel machine switched on, the Montauk Project successfully created a time wormhole to 1943 with power at both ends. That's how Ed and the Duncan Cameron of 1943 came through the portal, and the events described by Al Baylock occurred. Nichols kept the Duncan of 1943 away from the 1963 version, but quickly realized that time travel was way too complex and far too dangerous to be messing around with. He and three colleagues hatched a plan to use Duncan to shut the project down. We finally decided we had enough of the whole experiment. The contingency program was activated by someone approaching Duncan while he was in the chair and simply whispering, "The time is now." At this moment, he let loose a monster from his subconscious, and the transmitter actually portrayed a hairy monster. It was big, hairy, hungry, and nasty, but it didn't appear underground in the null point. It showed up somewhere on the base. It would eat anything it could find, and it smashed everything in sight. Several different people saw it, but almost everyone described a different beast. Nichols had to smash all of the equipment that powered the Montauk chair before the beast disappeared back into the nothingness. That instant, plus the successful time anchor that was built between August 12, 1943 and August 12, 1983, ensured that the project would be shattered. Employees were then brainwashed, and in 1984, the lower levels of the base were filled with cement. So, right before I got started, I had made a comment about how this kind of ties in with a TV show. A pretty big TV show. I don't know if everybody, I know Eric's seen it, but Stranger Things was actually written about the Montauk Project. That whole show is based around the entire Montauk Project. I don't believe any of that happened. There's too much evidence to prove that the Philadelphia Project never even existed. And I'm just not seeing more proof about the Montauk Project. I think it really is just a bunch of science fiction in my mind. But it's really interesting. It's a really interesting topic. What are your guys' thoughts? All right, I think that's going to be it this week, guys. Make sure you are practicing really good social distancing and good hand washing skills. I say that every week. Well, every episode. Even if your state is starting to open up businesses and removing their quarantine, I still highly recommend that you practice extremely good social distancing, because this thing comes in waves. So, make sure you guys stay safe, and we'll see you next week.